Welcome back to QAVTK. This is episode 717, I think, 23rd of April 2024. Market's up today. What's up with you, Tony, apart from the market?
Yeah, not much. It's been a nice week. Weather's good in Sydney.
Sold your house yet?
No, still trying. We had another meeting with an estate agent this morning. Send our rental furniture back, waiting for our stuff to come out of storage. Just a slow, painful process.
How long's it been on the market now? Like 3 months?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? Given all, every time I open a paper, it's like record prices, markets up so dramatically. Mm. Yeah. So anyway, we'll just keep progressing, I guess.
Is it the fact that people know that you have bodies in the walls? Is that
we
what
don't
it is?
Have it's bodies like in the walls.
It's an American Psycho thing.
No, I don't know. There's about there's another couple of penthouses around near us which aren't selling either. So I think it's just a market thing at the moment.
Bizarre.
Yes, it is.
What happened to all the Chinese that were snapping up all the property in Australia? It's.
I know. So we've been told Chinese don't like this neighbourhood. They prefer Barangaroo and inner Sydney. But frankly, I don't believe a word of what anyone tells me in the real estate industry anymore. They are so full of shit. It's just, I thought my faith was placed in the right places, and I've just been let down time and time again.
Wow.
And look, look, I shouldn't bag people, but because it probably is the market. But look, anybody out there who's young and considering a career in any sort of service industry, don't bullshit people. Like, you might think it's going to get you a quick sale, but it just comes around to bite you again in the future. Just be straight, be transparent, be honest. If you can't do it, say you can't do it. Don't bullshit people and lead them on.
I'll tell you who's had a crash course in that is Taylor. It's right. Interesting, like, Taylor got started with the drop shipping and all those sorts of things, mm-hmm. and he saw, very early on in his entrepreneurial career, a lot of shonky people doing a lot of shonky stuff, and now he's a few years into it, and he's just, developed a good sniff test on him now for all these guys that are waving their hands around and claiming big things, and, they're all talk.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying to me the other day, it's just like, they're all just full of shit. Everyone's full of shit. He sort of knows how to tell the real people from the bullshit artists now, which is, I think, good. You know, it's good to have figured that out at 23 or whatever he is.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's great.
Mm. Mm. A lot of shysters. Well, speaking of shysters, Bank of Queensland. what? The you, actual
you calling
hell
my wife
is,
a shyster, are you?
Yeah, well, I did have in my notes, not happy Jen. But I think the Commonwealth Bank, I've taken the Commonwealth Bank's old slogan and changed it to not happy Jen.
No, that's Yellow Pages' old slogan.
Was it?
Yeah. What do you mean you didn't get my ad in for the Yellow Pages this year? Not happy Jen.
Oh, well, there you go. I had that wrong. Mm. So, as we talked about last week, I had to sell Bank of Queensland after rumours came out that their results were going to come out on the 17th and they were going to take like a 40% hit, and the share price crashed ahead of that. And last week I was like, what the hell's going on people selling on rumours? So I had to sell it, real won it. Results came out, share price jumped when the results came out. Sell on the rumour, buy on the fact, or buy on the whatever.
That's right.
Results. Yep. I mean, it didn't jump all the way back. So it was like at $6.37 on the 4th of April. By the 16th, it was down to $5.79. On the 17th, it shot back up to $6.15, dropped to 5 cents, back up, back down. It's currently at $6.20 today. So it hasn't recovered all of where it was at. But, and I don't remember what I bought it for. Let me see. Nah, I don't want to go back. It just hurts too much. Don't want to go back and look, but I am going back and look. I bought it at $6.22 and $6.41 in a couple of different trenches. So I probably, what did I say it is? Five what?
620,
627. No, I still would have held it if it hadn't have tanked.
Yeah.
So what the hell happened? And they did take a hit, right? They did. Their results did. The rumors were right. They did, I think it was 33% or something. Yeah.
Kind of. I'm going to read from a couple of, from an article in The Fin about it, and then a research paper from Aud Manette, which Alex Hay sent through. This is from The Fin. Bank of Queensland flags profit pressures after earnings surprise. This was last week. Bank of Queensland shares surged on their best day on the share market in almost 18 months after the regional lender beat half-year earnings forecasts, despite Chief Executive Patrick Allaway warning that it could still fall short of a key turnaround target. Rolling against an unfair playing field that stopped regional lenders from seriously competing with bigger banks, Mr. Allaway said profit pressure at BOQ meant the bank had to consider additional ways to improve shareholder returns. We do recognise that the challenge is large, and if the current headwinds are structural, we won't be there. Get there with the current pathway, he said. We are looking at multiple opportunities to get to where we need to be. So he's referring to his internal targets. So basically, I think you're right, Cam, and this is, you know, my question out of all this is, where the frack is the ASX? Because I know when ASIC. Jenny received her board papers, and I know when the share price crashed, they're pretty close together. Not saying Jenny did anything, but, you know, whether someone was out there photocopying board agendas or crunching numbers for the board, or someone dropped a board paper at the airport or whatever, it leaked. And only half the story leaked, because as Aud Manette has put in their summary after the results went out about Bank of Queensland, statutory NPAT was broadly in line with expectations at $151 million, a significant increase on H1 23. Cash NPAT came in above consensus, which was $164.8 million, and the profit came in at $172 million. Net interest income of $725 million decreased by 13% and was just below consensus by $5 million. But I think probably the biggest thing that I took out of the results was loan impairment expense of $15 million decreased 56% on the first half, equating to 4 basis points to gross loans and advances. The decrease was primarily due to lower collective provision expense. And that's a big one for me, because I know banking analysts focus on what's called the jaws of income, so the difference between the cost of borrowing and running the bank and what they can charge for mortgages. And Bank of Queensland's costs have increased dramatically this half, largely because they're trying to remediate issues that I think APRA, the regulator, have raised about governance and anti-money laundering and that kind of thing, but also an investment in technology to get their costs down longer term. So their costs are up. And the jaws are lower than what the other banks have that they're compared to, but I think the key indicator when looking at banks is their loan impairment expense, and the fact that they've written that down is actually a good thing. And for me, that's always been a trigger in terms of when do I want to own banks. It's when they're reducing their impairments for bad debts on their mortgage books rather than increasing it. So I'm just going to call that out as something to watch, but I think that's why the share price jumped, and it's been sort of fluctuating around a bit, because on the one hand, Bank of Queensland beat the consensus forecast, and on the other hand, it was a bad result compared to last half. So that's where it's at. Having said that, I thought the bad news was already baked into the price, so I really think this gyration has been because of a leak. Those figures got out into the market somehow.
If it was the an alleged leak of the results that caused the market to crash, mm-hmm. but when the results came out, the market thought it was actually not too bad and the price shot back up.
Correct. So the leak only got half the story.
Yeah, right. By the way,
you're right. I should call it the alleged leak. I've got no evidence at all to suggest a leak other than circumstantial evidence.
Pretty big evidence.
Mm.
You remind me of Trump's defense attorney in his opening speech this week. Was let me tell you the truth about influencing elections. It's called democracy.
I thought the opening argument was, Mr. Trump, wake up.
Stop farting. Apparently he's sleeping and farting. I sold it.
Blow his toupee off.
David Simon, the writer of The Wire, said, well, when his mouth is forced to be closed, the shit needs to come out of one end or the other. Something to that effect. I sold Bank of Queensland all three parcels as a three-point trendline sell, not as a rule one. $6.08 was the 3PTL sell figure. So, you know, it's back way back above that now. It should have never gone down that. So it's just really disappointing. And, yeah, I want heads to roll, Tony, not necessarily Jenny's, but make sure she's on that for me. Tell her I want heads to roll.
Oh, well. I'll tell them.
Heads on spikes. Yeah. Like,
I want the heads to roll at the ASX. Who the frack is looking after this stuff?
Yeah. I don't know. So it's insane, an ASX.
Insane price movement just before results are announced. Come on.
Yeah. As far as you know, has any questions been asked?
No.
Is there a please explain coming out of no them at all?
No ticket. Nope. So the ASX clearly has their work cut out for them on a whole range of issues. The CHESS replacement system being number one, but also number two, I think, is new listings. And number three is they're not doing their job when it comes to making sure that the market is well regulated. Allegedly. Actually, if the ASX wants to come on and defend themselves, I'm happy to have that, but it's almost getting farcical now.
I don't believe those figures. Please explain.
There you go. Yeah, that's what we want.
Well, you've just reminded me of Pauline Hanson.
Donald Trump, Pauline Hanson, oh, yeah, rolling at all the big guns. Well, in better news, Tony, the portfolios, my super's taken another hit this week, like last couple of weeks. I got two stocks that I bought in February that are both nearly rule ones for me and my super. Generally, though, I did a portfolio analysis yesterday and today for the light and the dummy portfolio. They're all doing pretty well, actually. Surprisingly, they've had a good couple of weeks, most of our portfolios. But one of the things that I noticed this morning, and I'm pretty sure you've said stuff to this effect over the past, but KSC, I noticed something really particular with KSC, K&S Corporation, added it to the dummy portfolio in August 2021. Price was $1.60. I bought about 1,700 shares for the portfolio. It was a value of about $2,700, the parcel at the time. The $1.60, it's now trading at just shy of $3, $2.98. So share price has gone up considerably over that time. But the dividends, we've got $1,000 in dividends over that time, $984 in dividends.
Wow.
So it's paid for nearly, not quite half, but, 40% of the original trade just in dividends, let alone the nearly 100% increase in the share price over that period of time as well. And I just, getting back to this idea of buying and just holding, not rebalancing because a share's done well or whatever. It's just looking at the amount of dividends that it's delivered over that period of time. I was like, wow, that's, if we hold it for another couple of years, it basically pays for itself.
Yeah.
From the dividends, let alone from the capital appreciation of the shares. Like that's, I hadn't really seen that happen in the portfolio before.
No, I've definitely seen it happen over the years. It's a good thing to have. And you're right. The longer you hold stock, the more the dividends, matter. But it is unusual to see a stock both have strong growth and high dividends. It's normally one or the other in the share market. So like my experience is I've held stocks that have gone up, maybe 10 times and therefore the dividends become significant because they're still yielding at whatever they were yielding at when they first bought them, 3% or 4% or whatever. Yeah. But it's unusual to see a stock that has that much capital growth and a great dividend yield as well.
Well, the share price in a month ago was actually $3.85. It's dropped from that down to $3 in the last couple of weeks. I don't know why. I don't know if it's just the market or people have been taking their profits and getting out when the market's been dicey or if it's something to do with the business. But anyway, yeah, it's just really I was just going through some of the dividends recently in a portfolio and that really jumped out at me. I mean, we got a lot of stocks that we've held for a long time now in the dummy portfolio and that have delivered a lot of dividends, but nothing quite at that level. So that was an eye-opener for me. You want to do your pulled pork?
Yeah, yeah, I do. So thanks to PC for a request for this one today. I'm doing it on a company called Joyce, which has a code called JYC. And I'm not familiar with this company or their retail offering, so it was a bit of fun to go through and explore a new company. And I guess the reason why I haven't come across them before is that they are a Perth-based company. They are expanding onto the East Coast in Queensland and New South Wales, and they operate three businesses. They're a retail group. It's broken down basically into what's called the KWB Group and Bedshed. So KWB operates Kitchen Connections and Wallspan, which I guess what they do is in the name. Kitchen Connections makes and sells kitchen renovations, and Wallspan manufactures and sells wardrobe installations. So that's a large part of their business. And then Bedshed, which I think may have been the oldest part of this company's history, is a bedding store. Again, based in WA, but they have expanded to the East Coast as well. They do have a third business, which is just in its infancy. It's called Crave, and it operates furniture rentals and staging in the Perth area. It's a very small part of their business, but I guess there's synergy. If you're selling furniture, you might have some spare stock you can rent out, but in my mind, the question is whether that will ever be a large part of their business, given I think it turned over about $500,000 in its first year of operation. Interesting split between those businesses. So the Bedshed business is both franchised and company operated, and the kitchen and wardrobe showrooms is again split between those two. But on the Bedshed side, the franchise operations made a profit of $2.7 million. And the company-operated operations, which was the larger part of the business, made a profit of $2.3 million. So that says to me there's a bit of upside in growing the franchise business because it's making the same as the company-operated business. And I'm not sure how Bedshed franchising works, whether they own the store and put an operator in it or not, but usually franchising is less capital intensive than owning and operating yourself. But again, I'm not familiar with the operations here. The kitchen and wardrobe showrooms there, which I thought was interesting. This is the newer part of the business, but that's making $25 million in the last 12 months. So that's where the profit is. So the traditional bedding business is making about $5 million, but the kitchen and wardrobe showrooms are making $25 million. So, you know, I think this company is doing a pretty good job of moving away from, or I shouldn't say moving away from Bedshed, but getting into a new business which has better margins for it and better return than what traditionally it's operated. The wardrobe business, Wallspan, only has three stores and they operate in South Australia, so I'm not sure what their plans are there to roll out that business or not. But the big business is Kitchen Connection, has 22 sites in Queensland and New South Wales. And Bedshed has 6 company-operated stores and a further 37 franchise sites. And as I said, Kitchen and Wardrobe has 25 sites bringing in $25 million in profit. Bedshed has 28 sites contributing $5 million in profit. And it is Joyce do see the expansion coming in KWB. They expect to double their kitchen and wardrobe stores in the longer term. But they still see growth in Bedshed increasing by 20 stores in the foreseeable future. So interesting. I just find that kind of thing interesting from a management point of view that, you know, they're playing around with different types of models and different types of areas and will, I guess, be able to manage the growth based on their profit returns and capital requirements in those. But the latest figures have been good. So revenue is up 6%, half on half, and EBIT is up 23%, half on half. So that's good. And the shares are doing well lately. So good on PC for hollowing this company. And I hope he's bought it earlier on in the year because they've jumped quite dramatically in the last month or so. I would say on the back of their profit results. That's I did a quick search on for news on the company, and I couldn't find much else but that, which would probably lead to it growing. It's possible that there's not much brokerage coverage on this stock, so it's also possible the stockbroker upgraded their recommendations and their clients have been buying because it's only a small company. In terms of QAV numbers, I'm doing the analysis at a price of $4.13. This is a small company. Market cap's 117 million. ADT's 26,000. So it won't suit everybody listening. May suit some. No consensus target on price for this one, so we can't compare the current price to consensus target. IV1 is $1.61. There's no IV2 because we don't have any earnings forecast coming from brokers, which is, you know, I think is probably a good thing. If people like this stock, they can get in before many of the brokers. I only found one, Euros, who was covering this, which is a Perth-based stockbroker. So, yeah, opportunity to get ahead of the pack on this one. Yield on from this company is currently trading at over 7%, 7.07%, which scores well for us. Stock Doctor Financial Health is strong and steady. The financial health is strong and the trend is steady, so that's good. ROE, if anyone's interested, is nearly 26% for this company, which is also good. PE is 12.8 times, which is not the highest or the lowest over the last 3 years, so we can't score it for that. PropCap is less than 5 on this one, 4.97 times, so that's a good thing. So this company on the metrics is well managed. So ROE of 26% and PropCap of less than 5, it's really throwing out some cash flow now, which is great. Net equity per share is $1.29 and book plus 30 is $1.67. And the share price I'm doing the analysis at was $4.13. So you can't buy this anywhere near book price. So we can't score it for that. Does seem to have an owner founder by the name of Dan Smetana, who looks like he was the former bedshed chairperson and possibly set it up. But certainly when it merged or took over Joyce, he still currently holds 39%. I think a little bit less than that. There's a couple of other directors who hold a little bit. I think he has 37%, but we score it for owner-founder, which is good. Can't score it for consistently increasing equity, even though it came close, but it's a zero for that. All in all, then on the quality side, we give it 9 out of 11 or 82% and 0.16 for the QAV score. In my mind, the pros and cons are the interesting part of this stock, and I struggled to put some things into both camps. So I think the pros for this company are to grow the franchising opportunity. If it is a capital-light way of growing the store network, it is returning as well in terms of profit sense as the small number of company-operated stores are. I could have that wrong. Maybe if they had more company-operated stores, they'd be making more profit, but franchise seems to be working well for them. Definitely rolling out more KWB stores, the kitchen and wardrobe stores, looks like a strength for them, and they've identified that themselves. I think East Coast expansion has got to be a positive for them. Bedshed seems to have a history in WA. But, you know, I can put it in the pro column, but also the cons column, because if they're based in Perth and they're seeing growth on the eastern seaboard, there's going to be a lot of management overhead flying back and forwards, or at least setting up some kind of management hub on the East Coast to service those stores. So that may well have a cost impact at some stage. They may have well taken care of it. But I know when I was working in my executive career, like flying to Perth was actually further than flying to Auckland. So when you're based in Sydney or Melbourne, so it does come with a cost. On the con side, this business, Crave, the furniture rental business, it's tiny. It may have some upside and it may have some synergies by cycling furniture, which they can't sell. You know, having just been through the whole issue of renting furniture for a sale, it's not a big business. We went out to the place that we rented from. There was one factory. It's done $500,000 for this business. There's only a certain number of companies in the market that are up, sorry, businesses in the houses in the market that are up for sale that need furniture rental, and it tends to be short term. So you've got the cost of putting furniture in and taking it back all the time. And there's, it tends to have established players. We knew who to go to in Sydney. There was only a couple of players in Sydney. So anyway, look, it might have some synergies at the back end, but I don't see it as being a growth potential for them. In the kitchen renovation business, I would think there's plenty of competition doing that now. And IKEA springs to mind, where you can go and order a modular kitchen and they come in and replace it for you. But there are a lot of small operations who do well in that space now on a local basis. Perhaps the potential is to take some of those out and become a roll-up with this business, but I would think that they would face competition on the kitchen side. And likewise on the wardrobe side, I know it's only three sites for them, but I can't see that being a huge business because, again, if you're in the market for a new wardrobe, you're probably getting a builder in to do some kind of renovation and they'll have their own supplies for that, but I could be wrong. I think the biggest risk that I see is that this is a small company. Its revenues were only about $140 million for the last 12 months. I know they're growing, so that's a good thing. But my experience in investing in companies with sort of circa $100 million or less is that when times are good, they're fine, but they don't have the sort of size to be able to continue operating for very long if there's a downturn in their markets. You know, if you're a large company doing $1 billion in sales and there's a couple of years of a downturn in the retail market, in the residential market, then you've probably got some reserves to be able to ride that out. But a company with $100 million or $140 million in revenue is going to do it tough. There's not as much capacity to ride through a downturn. So I'll highlight that as a risk. It's always been my rule of thumb to be careful of these small companies because of that. But on the flip side, it seems to be well managed, so perhaps that they will grow in time to get out of that sort of trap of being a small revenue company when the residential market turns down. The other question I had, and I didn't have time to do a deep dive into this, but the ownership structure of this company is a bit opaque. What I mean by that is it seems like either through acquisition or through necessity, these different types of businesses like Bedshed and the kitchen one are in separately owned companies. And I wasn't sure whether Joyce owned 100% of each of those or owned enough to be able to consolidate the financials. So I'm not sure about the ownership structure here and whether there may be some ongoing partnership issues with the other owners in these businesses or whether there's an opportunity there to buy them out at some stage. But that was something which I guess did need a bit more research on that. But yeah, that's Joyce. It's had a good half and it's growing well now, and it seems on our QAV metrics to be worthy of consideration.
We own it in two portfolios. One of my Stockopedia portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
Bought it back in November at $2.99. It's up 35%.
Mm-hmm.
And then end of February in one of the light portfolios, it's up about 15% since then, bought it at $3.51. So showed up in both of those checklists quite a while ago, late last year, early this year. And it's done well.
Yeah, good. Well, hopefully the curse of the pool port doesn't work with this one.
Well, I tell you who has been cursed today, just popped up in my alerts, Atlas Pearls, ATP. Oh. And that's the end of the free episode of QAV for this week. If you're a new listener, I just should let you know how this works. So we have a free episode every week, runs for about half an hour. We have a premium episode also every week. It goes for another 30 to 60 minutes, depending on how many questions we get. It's where Tony answers questions from our club members. If you want to check out the premium episodes and all the other benefits of being a QAV club member, which is access to the checklist and the Bible and the private Facebook groups and the other comms channels that we have, invites to the dinners, Zoom calls, etc., etc., just sign up for the two-week free trial and check all that stuff out. You can do that at qavpodcast.com.au. Look for the free trial button there. And if you like the idea of value investing QAV style but don't feel like you have the time or resources to learn how to do QAV for yourself, think about signing up for QAV Lite. That's our relatively new service where we send you the stock tips every week. And then we also monitor those stocks in a portfolio. And if they become a sell, we email our QAV Lite members and tell them that it's time to sell that stock and what to replace it with. check that out too. It's sort of a low effort way of doing QAV. Still better if you know how to do it yourself, I think, because Tony could get hit by a bus and then where are you? But while he's not, we can do this. So check that out, qavpodcast.com.au/light, LIGHT. If you don't want to sign up to any of those, just keep listening to the free episode. And if you have any questions, shoot me an email. You'll find that on our website too. All right, have a great week and good luck with your investing.
The QAV podcast is a production of Spacecraft Publishing Proprietary Limited, authorised representative of AFSL 520442, AFS representative number 001292718. Please don't make any investment decisions based solely on listening to this podcast. This is presented as general advice only, not personal financial advice. We don't know your personal financial circumstances. Please see a financial planner before making any investing decisions.